You're listening to Confessing Animals with Jen Harris and Vanessa Arrico, rebel poets, real rebels, really talking poets, rebelling and listening. Listening.
Okay, don't interrupt me.
I'm busy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Confessing Animals podcast. I am Jen Harris.
And I'm Vanessa Arrico.
And today we are talking to Patrick Grant, who grew up in Overland Park, Kansas, where he is now a high school Spanish teacher. After graduating from the University of Kansas, Patrick worked with a Christian collegiate ministry in San Antonio, Texas, and then the Dominican Republic. In his free time, he enjoys playing sports, hanging with friends and family, and being overly particular about beer and coffee. You can find him on Facebook, patrick.grant.98. Patrick's interview was just, it included such a wild card of things. I love his tender and unique perspective on this whole experience.
I know, I love Patrick's words. And I can't believe we didn't ask him about the coffee and beer, because I'm curious about what he's particular about. But
for telling our listeners that we already failed them.
I know, we're big failures, okay? Confessing Animals podcast, where we fail to make your
follow up on the bio info.
we took a little trip. You know, we went to Argentina, we went to the Dominican Republic, we're in Olathe, Kansas. We talked Spanish, ministry, religion, revenge, redemption. Like, Patrick touched on a lot of things.
He said at some point he didn't even think revenge applied to him or within his work. And I mean, I think that's the even greater importance of the poetry that he shares in this episode, because his consideration of that subject led him to some self-exploration, some self-realizations that I'm sure that he had sitting around in there. But I liked being able to see all the dots connect and be like, oh, I do have something to say about the subject of revenge, and here's my very unique take on it, you know?
Yeah, he's a teacher, and his self-reflection and his self-awareness, it's so important. I think, like, this is, like, a key to his success right here, right? Like, already at this point, the level of questioning and awareness that he has and that he's doing and putting it into his writing is so important.
I agree. I'm excited. I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode with Patrick Grant. Are you ready to do this?
And also, if you are not already subscribing, subscribe to the Patreon, because then you get to see Patrick's beautiful dimples. And, you know, like, it's a joy. So, like, why wouldn't you want to go do that?
Yeah. Duh. I mean, who's not subscribed to Patreon? Who's listening to this that isn't supporting the fucking podcast?
I know, like, please just watch us. You get the whole video. You get the whole interview. There's more poetry. There's more questions. There's more Jen and I running our mouths.
Do you think I do this for free?
I mean, we put clothes on for this, okay?
I took a whole shower. I'm wearing
multiple
colors of Band-Aids right now for this.
You are. You're very various shades of beige.
I'm fading into my 40s very quickly. I'm just like, I need warm sweaters and Band-Aid sand-colored shirts and ripped jeans.
Okay, so support us on Patreon so Jen doesn't fade into the beige.
No, I'm happy fading into the beige. Support us on Patreon so I can buy a beige house and be left alone. No, I'm kidding. That's not what I want, universe. You know what I want.
Okay, all right,
Vanessa,
we love you
ready? You ready?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay.
Patrick Grant, is this your first? Have you been on a podcast before?
I actually have. One of my friends who I grew up with started a podcast, and got to go on there and talk about my experience with church. So that was interesting.
your experience with church. Tell us your experience with church.
Wow. How much time do we have?
We've got a tight hour, baby.
The basics of it. So I come from, my parents are divorced, and my dad grew up Catholic, and my mom was, so I'd go to like Pentecostal, all black church with my mom. She had custody. And so I guess they technically had joint custody. So Wednesdays and Sundays, every other Sunday, I'd go to all black Pentecostal church. And then I would go to mass with my dad on the Sundays I was with him. So very, very different expressions of faith. And to throw another layer, for a while, we would go to predominantly black Catholic churches also. So very, very different than when we started going to mass in the suburbs. The priest would be like, can I get an amen? And he had like 30-minute homilies, and mass was like 90 minutes. And I'm like, that's still shorter than my mama church, so I'm down with that. And I also went to school.
So real.
Yeah. As a kid, you're just kind of like, I'm just trying to get through this. I went to a private Christian school and a very conservative schools. And so, yeah, I grew up in church. I was at church a lot. My mom, we went to children's church for a little bit. And I was like, I don't want to be here. The kids were bad. I don't get my cookies because the kids are talking too much.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, while you're going to these two, like, wildly different church experiences, like, you're going to church, you're in a Christian school, like, did you feel connected to it? Or were you like, this is just something I have to do, and so, like, I'm going through the motions? Or did you have a spiritual connection, like, with what you were being taught?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think both. I never really felt super connected to my dad's church. Like, I didn't do any of the sacraments that happened in the Catholic Church. I didn't do First Communion or Confirmation or Confession, any of those things. And so I was just confused a lot of times. Like, if you've been to Mass, you know, if you're not in the church, you have to go up with your arms crossed and get the blessing. And I'm like, Dad, what is going on? Like, why can't I take communion? And he had to explain all that to me. With my mom's church, I did feel kind of connected. It was really interesting. Just throughout different parts of my life, I would feel different levels of connection. But I'd say high school is when I started to internalize my faith a lot more, like in the middle school, beginning of high school. And then college, I was involved in campus ministries and ended up working for one after college.
What does a campus ministry do?
So there are different ones. They kind of have different ways of going about ministry. My job was to do what we call like one-on-one. The buzzword is discipleship, but it's really mentorship. It's like helping younger people in their faith, like read the Bible and understand what they're reading and pray with them and talk about some of those important tenets of the faith and help them to help others do the same thing. And then we would go out on campus and we would share the gospel. We had like different illustrations that we would do. We had kind of, it's like a rally night. It's basically like a youth group night is kind of how some of them are set up. Like you have an icebreaker.
Oh, youth group. How I loved thee.
You know.
Is this like a campus crusade for Christ kind of thing?
Yeah, so very similar. Okay. Very similar. The one I was with was called the Navigators. So I did that in San Antonio, which is one of the reasons why I'm repping the Spurs. And then I also did that in the Dominican Republic for 2.5 years.
How long were you in the Dominican Republic?
2.5 years.
Okay, yeah, and you studied Spanish in college, is that right? Because you're a high school Spanish teacher now.
I am now a high school Spanish teacher. I did study in college. I had the most redundant double major ever, Spanish and Spanish education.
Well, so were you interested in Spanish and you were learning it in college before you went to the Dominican Republic? Was that a coincidence or did you, like, you know, what's the connection between the two?
Yeah, so I studied Spanish starting in middle school. So I had 6 years of Spanish before college. And at that point, you're like, I just want to be fluent. And so through some experiences I had in college, I got to go to Argentina twice. I went once in college and then once as I'm on staff with that ministry. And after that experience, my second time there, I was like, I think I want to live in a Spanish-speaking country. I wanted to get better. And then I remember I was meeting one-on-one with this guy. His name was Maximo. And at the time, I'm probably 24. He's, you know, mid-30s. And he's, like, asking me for advice. And we're, like, reading deep passages of the Bible in Spanish. And I just remember feeling like, oh, this feels like home. Like, this kind of just, like, feels like something I want to do. And then there was an opportunity to go to the Dominican Republic. The couple who recruited me were my team leaders for Argentina when I was in college. So it just kind of all worked out in that way. So people always ask me, how was the Dominican Republic? And I'm like, really good, really hard.
What do you feel was the best and the worst of the experiences that you had? Like, what was really good and what was really hard?
The relationships were really good. Like, I still talk to some of my friends there. I got to go to a couple of my friends, like, got to see them get married and go to the weddings and got to visit where they were from. And my experience with Dominicans is that they're hilarious. They're just always laughing, always loud. It sounds like people are arguing. They're not. They're just talking.
I totally relate to this. I have a very loud Italian father, and everyone thinks he's yelling, but I was like, no, he's just talking. He's not mad, I promise.
Yes, yes. And so I just, I love the people. I love my friends. Some of the hard things were, I was surprisingly homesick. Like, I'd lived away from home for a while. That was interesting. Some of the cultural things were just hard. I feel like in the Dominican Republic, you have to be a little bit more aggressive. Like, just, you have to know how to advocate for yourself a little bit better. Like, you're trying to get onto these packed subways and, you know, the cars are coming by trying to get you to go through. And that's just not who I am. Like, I'm not a very aggressive person. And so that was kind of difficult. And then, yeah, there were just some challenges with ministry. Like, I remember moving there and I had this expectation of, like, oh, I'm going to be meeting with guys. It's going to be great. Starting Bible studies. And I'm not a recruiter. And I'm in this pioneering role. And I was like, oh, this is really hard. It feels like my contribution is cooking meals for, like, our gathering. Or when I literally said that to my teammates. Like, the guys just bring me down here to cook. Like, man. But it was really cool to see how even cooking was used. One of my best friends down there would come over to my place to play my PlayStation, and it's like 5 o'clock, I'm hungry. Dominicans eat later. I'm like, bro, I'm gonna cook the food, you can eat it, whatever. And after a few weeks of that, I'm like, nah, man, you can't just be sitting here on my couch playing my PlayStation while I'm in the kitchen cooking. I'm like, you gotta come in the kitchen and cook with me. He didn't know how to cook. So taught him how to cook, and his wife still thanks me. Like, oh, thank you so much.
Yes.
And that's exactly why he's married in this moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this is the valuable, these are the valuable resources that your friends can bring to your life. It's like, you know what, I'm going to make you a more well-rounded person. And I think it's interesting that you said you were surprisingly homesick. Like, there is something about deep, like, seeking deep adventure and knowing and understanding and purpose and calling in life, but still feeling that tug of your origins. You know, I've been torn into like that a few times, and it's just like, it's a surprising experience every single time it happens, but I don't think it seems like it didn't diminish your experience in the Dominican Republic because of that.
No, not really. But yeah, you're right. There was a big difference between going to college, going to San Antonio, and going to the Dominican Republic. Each one, like, college was great. It's like, oh, I lived with 50 dudes. Community was easy. Just, hey, somebody's around who wants to do something. Then San Antonio was a little harder. I had to figure out how to make friends who I didn't work with, you know. And then I get to the Dominican Republic, and it's like, me and my roommate are wildly different. I don't have that many friends. I'm new in this country. There's the language barrier. I speak Spanish, but just not on that, you know. I get there and people talk really quickly and
right. It's like not on that level, right? And there's something about being thrown out of, like, you know, we get bored of the mundane and our comfort, but then we realize, like, being able to navigate our hometown, navigating places that, like, we just know, you don't think about. So when you're thrown into a situation, like if you're in a different country, if you're around different cultures, different languages, you're just like, oh, right. Then like that comfort's kind of stripped away and you're navigating and muddier waters, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of challenges. People say immersion is the best way to learn a language. And on some level, I think that's really true. But it, in my experience, you have to be pretty mentally tough because, like, you're going into this environment, you've been able to communicate well for most of your life, and now you can't. So it's like being a toddler, you can't express what they want, but you know what you want. You just can't tell everybody else or understand what
everybody
else.
That's frustrating, right? Like, that frustration comes in. And then it's kind of like that you're a big fish in a little pond, but now you're, like, in this I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say. Big fish, little pond. Now you're not.
And then you swap. Yeah. Then you swap. Then you're a tiny fish in an enormous pond. No, truly. I think, you know what, but Patrick, I think what you're doing is something, what you've done is something that's incredibly brave because, I mean, I dare suggest that like the optimistic and the hopeful and the adventurous go in and people come out tougher. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't want you to be tough when you get dropped in the middle of a foreign country. I want you to be resilient because like shit's going to get real while you're here. Yes. But being rendered almost useless in the form of communication and also making yourself a minority, I think is an incredibly important lesson, like specifically for white people. It's like, I expect white people to go into environments where they are not the majority in America and just hang out for a little while, like just get an idea of what it's like to look around the room and not see you reflected everywhere. And so I think it's incredibly brave that you're willing to make these big leaps in life that are, you know, are you passionate about foreign language? Are you passionate about Dominican culture? Like, what is it that pulled you towards Spanish that then led you on this adventure?
Man, honestly, so Spanish was, I had good teachers in middle school and high school. It's actually been fun to be a Spanish teacher now in the area because one of my favorite teachers I ever had is still teaching in Blue Valley. Like I went to Shawnee Mission and I've gotten to see her a couple of times and it's like, oh man, like you're one of the reasons I'm a Spanish teacher. And one of the reasons why I love the culture and the language, the Dominican didn't have a distinct pull until I went there. Argentina did because I just liked the accent. Like, that's what it was. I learned about it in the phonetic class. And like, they say show instead of yo. I love this. This is great. But yeah, so after living in the Dominican, it is a lot more a part of who I am. Like, my Spanish is pretty Dominican. I'll even meet students from other countries or people from other countries and like, where are you from? When they hear me speak Spanish. Like, I'm from here. I just cut off my S's and my D's now. That's all.
Because it sounds sexier. That's why.
Yes. They even have a term for it in the Dominican when somebody who's not from there like picks up the language and the culture. It's a platanado, like your plantain.
You're I love that.
So, I mean, I went out of my way to pick up the accent and to pick up the slang because I really enjoyed that aspect of the culture.
Do you read in Spanish?
I do. Not a ton. I picked up a book for a trip I was on my Kindle and I was trying to read that in Spanish. But I can read in Spanish. I still have like a bilingual Bible that's got Spanish on one side and English on the other. And every now and then I'll read the Spanish. My students have to read 10 minutes a week for my Spanish 4 class. And sometimes while they're reading, I'll pull up an article in Spanish also and just read that as well to kind of keep up on it.
That's how I feel about writing on my own prompts. I'm like, you know what? You don't get to get out of this just because you're teaching it. Do the work.
Exactly. And reading is great regardless of the language to pick up vocabulary and different things, and you can learn new words. So it is definitely something I should do a little bit more.
Well, I think that you're doing a great job. I'm sure of it because you're still teaching and your students are obviously still learning. But what how does that then lead you into the writing workshop? Like, how did we cross paths? How did you wind up in WWKC? Like, tell us about that experience and you as a writer.
Yeah. So, Jen, I met you right before I moved to the Dominican Republic, I think. When I was in San Antonio, I started doing some open mics for, like, really the first time outside of the campus setting. And when I came back to Kansas City, I had like 6 months. I'm raising support, and I'm like, I want to keep doing this. So I went to the Uptown Arts Bar, and you were the MC one time, and did some poetry slams. It was really funny because my mom judged one of those poetry slams that I was in. And I don't know if it's just like a Black culture thing or what it is. My mom's like, sorry, Patrick, if you're not as good as the others, I'm not giving you the same score. Like,
I feel like I remember talking to your mother and being like, I'm trusting you to lack in bias right now.
And she is good at that. She will be like, Patrick, you know, you were good, but they were better.
Mom kept it real.
Yes. So I had done that. That's when we met. And then I left. I came back. And then the Lenexa Arts Center, I was just hanging out down there one time at the city center and saw the Sunflower Workshop. I was like, oh, okay. I guess at that point it was still an open mic. And I saw that flyer and I was like, I'm living right down the street. So I came to that. I was like, oh, I know you.
So that's just kind of keep inviting you to these writing-based experiences, please.
Yes. And then I was getting those emails about the workshop. And my writing style naturally is I write out of my feels. So if I'm feeling it, that's probably what I'm writing about. But I saw that the workshop and the prompts, I was like, this is probably be really good for me as a writer to get out of just writing about what I'm feeling in the moment and actually have to kind of think through the process a little bit more. And so I joined and yeah, just kind of really enjoyed it. It's always fun to have a spot to write and to read. I love writing, but being able to share it is also super, super fun.
You have a very lyrical cadence to your writing. And I'm interested, like, do you have any musical background? Like, where does this inspiration for your style come from?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Also, I don't really have any musical background. Like, I'm always singing. Not necessarily well, but I'm always kind of just singing around the house. I listen to a lot of hip hop. I grew up on gospel, Dr. Kirk Franklin in our house, Red Hammond. And so I think I just picked up on that. And even like with language, I'm pretty good at picking up accents. I've noticed like it didn't take me that long to pick up a Dominican accent. I had an Argentine accent for a little bit in my Spanish. And so I think as I've listened to different poets, it's like, oh, okay, I kind of start to emulate them. So there's one poet who I used to listen to. He's like a poet rapper. His stage name is Propaganda. And I think there was a long time when I was kind of copying him, his intonation and writing style. And then the words.
So we all have icons and heroes and people who lead us to our own voice. You know, there's so many writers that I'm sure that I emulated a little too.
That's how we learn. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we're a mimetic species. You know what I mean? Like we mime. It's such a great way to learn to get to your own voice, like you said, Jen. You know, like we all tend to like, you know, lean into, oh, whoever's style like we're into, right? And then you start copying it. But like in the midst of that, though, like you find your own flow, you find your own energy, you find your own voice. And then, you know, you kind of grow out of that and it turns into you.
Yeah, it's really funny. When I first started performing, my mom came to one of them and she's like, Patrick, why are you going so hard? Like, you're not hard. Like, why are you doing that?
You're not hard.
Okay, I love your mom, by the way.
Yeah, she is great, and she keeps it real. But it was just kind of funny because I was like, what? I'm not doing anything. But now as I look back, it's like, oh, I was just emulating the people I was listening to, and it took me a while to find my own voice, my own cadence.
I definitely understand that. Well, and there's some styles that really encourage you to try harder, right? And then there's some styles that are just like so distinctly and uniquely someone else's creation that, I don't know, I just kind of stand in awe and I'm like, damn, am I ever going to be in possession of like a truly original thing that people want to mimic? You know what I mean? Because I recognize it as a performing, as a spoken word performer. Like, man, when someone comes up with something fresh and new, I'm like, why not me? Why not me, Lord? I'm ready. I'm ready to show it off.
Well, the performance aspect is interesting too, because like spoken word, like slam poetry, is very different than just like poet on the page, right? Like, I feel the style, the cadence, the way the story is told is in a more theatrical way, in a performative way, right? Like, so are you interested in that performativity aspect of it, or performative aspect? I can't stop saying performativity. I said that
Vanessa, you're trying to say it so many times that they have to add it to Webster's at the end of the year. Like, they just look at how many autocorrects. You're on your way, baby.
We're going to have our own confessing animals dictionary when this is done, because we've all made up so many words in the process of this podcast.
That's fantastic. And that's one of the greatest things about English, is we just make up stuff all the time.
Yeah, our whole language is a structure of bullshit.
It's so confusing. Whenever people are like, is English easier to learn or Spanish? And I'm like, certain aspects of each are easier. You can learn English verbs very quickly. Spanish verbs take a little bit more time, but we have a lot of weird, goofy rules and words. I enjoy performing. It's really interesting. I've been going to like therapy for, I don't know, a little over a year now. And last session, I was like, I really like the spotlight. I really do. I think I just need to say that.
I like that. That just admitting it to yourself, right?
Yeah. And being okay with it. Like, there are times when it's okay to be in the spotlight.
So this is a perfect segue. And I would such love a perfect to hear segue. What you have to share today.
All right. So since the topic is redemption, this one talks a lot about that. Called Your Glory. Your glory, incomprehensible for creatures as reprehensible as the unredeemed man. You are clothed in the righteousness that is unattainable, but yet wholly available to the fully repentant man. Or in other words, you place your righteousness on those who have placed their faith in you. A faith placed in Jesus, who clothed himself with fragile humanity in order to save themselves those who died in their sins and depravity. Oh, how he must love us. To die for those whose beginning was dust and those whose end would be ashes, showing the grace that seems unjust. The Father punished his Son for the sake of the guilty. Or in other words, he took on the role of judge, jury, and guilty to become the redeeming advocate for those who are in fact guilty. A holiness defined by unsurvivable glory has been revealed to redeem man, because you have put your spirit within the hearts of those who believe and have received an eternal salvation stemming from the sacrifice of your Holy One. How incomprehensible are your ways to this man who was a former slave to a sinful desire, and yet it was me who you chose to save. My heart will rejoice and my lips will praise for the way you have chosen to love your rebellious creation, reconciling humanity to yourself through yourself and sealing us in you with yourself. Oh God, how grateful your incomprehensible grace has made me. Incomprehensible in motivation, but comprehensible in function, this once reprehensible man has been redeemed, and now he longs to rest eternally in your presence and in your glory, clothed fully in the righteousness of Christ. Oh, to know you. Yes, this is eternal life, and I desire to live it eternally.
Tell us about that. Tell us how redemption plays a role in your life and how it affects your writing.
Yeah, as I was thinking about redemption, especially through the lens of my faith and as a practicing Christian, it's like, Jesus redeemed me, you know, through his sacrifice. He redeemed me. He made me new. But then I feel this tension as I think about redemption, as I think about being redeemed. And it's one of the probably the most frustrating things about my faith is at times with that tension that I feel. So in this one, you don't see that. It's really more of a just like a thankful piece, and more of a, you know, recognizing who he is piece. But in my day-to-day, I'm like, all right, I'm redeemed, but why don't I feel like it? Or I'm redeemed, but why don't I live like it? What's the hang-up? Where is that? And I think the Bible talks a lot about that. I don't know if we as Christians talk a lot about that all the time, but I think the Bible has a lot to say about it. Even just that famous verse of, the things I want to do, I don't do, and the things I don't want to do, I do. And it's not just a faith thing, it's like an everybody thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally here for it right now. Having this conversation before you called in this morning.
Yeah, it's like I ask myself this question a lot. Like, what is this tension? What is my blockage? Like, what? Why am I not doing the things I want to be doing? Like, what's preventing me? Like, what's the next? Like, you know, wow. Like, thank you for reading that passage, because it's like, and I even mentioned, I was having this conversation about like translation, and apparently, the man who translated Rumi, you know, like the most famous poet Rumi that we all know, is like this white man. And he, scholars are now calling out like how he took out like the Islamic faith out of the poetry. And so like, we're not getting like a true reading, but like no translation is really a true reading. But also it's like the essence of poetry or the essence of religion for me is like, you know, as someone who doesn't believe in God, I didn't grow up with religion. I can read passages from the Bible and like glean so much, and I'm inspired, and it's beautiful. And I have that absent belief in God, right? Like, so to me, that's not the point, is like a conversion or a introduction to some kind of faith, because it's more transcendent than that. Poetry is transcendent. The written word, the Bible, everything that these stories or these morals or these ideas or these songs talk to us about, you know?
Yeah. I think what's really cool about the Bible and like the poetry in the Bible is like it can fulfill multiple purposes. Like it can be encouraging, you know, whether you believe in God or not, but then it can also point to who is God or point to Jesus. Yeah, so I like that. Like my first year teaching was rough. I mean, the pandemic hit, and I just remember driving to school and just like having to listen to music just to like, okay, all right, I can do this. I can teach these high schoolers how to teach speak Spanish. I can do this. Not really sure how that relates to redemption, but just the beauty of
I mean, the fact that you're still doing it, and hopefully you're finding it to be less exhausting, more rewarding, or perhaps something that you're able to tame in a way, you know, something that you're able to come full circle on the understanding of. So if you're yeah. feeling, I guess, empowered in your experience where you once experienced despair, then that's absolutely a story of redemption.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Like, literally my first year, I could feel anxious on the drive to school. Just, you know, hadn't been back in the country that long, trying to figure out how to live in the States again and then how to teach a new career.
And now and high schoolers are scary.
Yeah, some of them are. It's really funny. And so I woke up Monday and I was like, oh, I'm kind of excited to teach today. Yeah, this will be good. And then there are other days where like at the end of the school day, I text my coworker and I'm like, these children are trying me today. I don't know what it is about today that they want to try me, but all right, we're going to make it through.
Do you have like mantras to like, you know, I mean, because you're still fairly young, right? Like, you know, and like,
how do you get through the day teaching high schoolers? I don't understand.
Yeah, like exactly when they're testing you, when they're trying you, and like, do you like, how do you take that breath and smile with those dimples and say, okay, I got this?
I've gotten way better at it. There's been a few things that I've kind of relied on. One is I am blessed to be in a fantastic department. Like all of the world language teachers at my school are great. And we support each other a lot, which is not true at every school. So I'm really grateful for that. And this year, the big thing has been when I'm like frustrated with a student or a group of students, I've been able to take a breath and be like, what am I struggling with? Like, is the behavior really that inappropriate? Or is it just that like, I want control. Like I want control of the situation. I want control of the student. I just want them to stop doing the thing that's getting on my nerves. And as I've done that, it's like helped me to be able to ignore some things. Like I gave some students a seating chart. Those kids like, oh, why can't I sit in the back? I want to be in the back of the room. And I just ignored it. I'm like, this student knows why they need to be in the front of the room. I don't need to tell them. They're intelligent.
Based on you desiring to be in the back, you'll actually be moving forward now. So,
yes. another thing is a lot of kids, like I just love a lot of my students, have great relationships with a lot of my students. I was supposed to judge a debate tournament this morning, but I lucked out and my cousin was one of the debaters, so I got out of it. and they know that this is my opinion because I told them yesterday, I was like, I love you all, but I don't love being a debate judge. That's not how I want to spend my Saturday morning. I'll do this for you.
You're like, look, I teach you all week. Like, give me my Saturday, please.
It's very parental of you. I mean, to be like, listen, you're mostly my priority, but not every minute.
No, no. And I even tell them, like, I have better boundaries now than I did my first year. I try really hard not to work at home. I mean, normally I have to work on a Sunday just to get some plans ready. So students are like, oh, Profe, did you grade my assignment that, you know, was 4 days late? And I'm like, oh, that's going to take 3 to 5 business weeks.
Like, I don't
know.
Right?
Yep.
You did not pay for expedited shipping.
Right. And then they'll email me at like 8 o'clock p.m. and I have the mistake of having my email on my phone. I just look at it now and I'm like, you know what? I can't wait. I can wait till tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. This is not urgent for me. And I want them to learn that lesson. Like when they have their phones in class, whatever drama is going on is really not urgent. It can wait.
I know we've created this kind of facade of like, well, you can't get rid of your cell phone because what if there's an emergency? Here's the deal, folks. Most of y'all ain't got emergency status lives. I know a couple people who for real need cell phones. Most of us, we don't need this shit. There is no emergency. And your friends popping off in between classes is not an emergency.
Oh, it's not even in between classes. It's all in throughout the class. Like, that's another way I survive. I just don't sweat their cell phones all the time. Like, my first year, they had Netflix on the computers because all of our kids have computers. They blocked that, praise the Lord. But now they have this Tetris plug-in that so I just walk around the room and see them playing Tetris. And I'm like, that's your grade. I passed Spanish 2 already. Like, I'll help you. I'll be there for you. I'll tell you to get off Tetris. But
you're like, yeah, I did the work. Now, like, are you going to do the work? You're going to have to start making, like, TikTok Spanish videos to, like, pop up when you're scrolling, and then all of a sudden you're on their feed.
They would love that, though. They really want me to get a TikTok, and I'm fighting it tooth and nail. Just, no.
I feel like if you can make wholesome content that betters the experience of the world, then by all means. But, like, if you're just going to do dance challenges, everybody sit down. No.
Yes. There was a famous Spanish teacher on TikTok last year who would say it's time to eat and then like eat his lunch on camera, like just throw it down like Cookie Monster. And so they would always be like, okay, how do you say it's time to eat in Spanish? And I'm like, I know what you're trying to get me to do. And I've been on TikTok from a student. I may have done the Dougie in class one day. And they ordered
yes.
it. And put it on TikTok without my knowledge. So we had to have a conversation about social media and what you can and can't post and permission and consent. So that was fun.
No, so many conversations. Yeah. Like so many opportunities like that. Like, I think a lot of what you're saying is really good for parenting. It's really good, like, in general, with, like, talking about these boundaries, talking about consent. Oh, it's about the control. You're like, is this behavior really that bad, or do I just like want to have control of the situation? That is such an intelligent question to like be able to in the moment like ask yourself, because we all know these things, right? Like, we all have the tools. It's so hard to use the tools in your toolbox while it's happening, right? Like, wow. Yeah. And what, this is your second year of teaching and you're already there? Like, bravo.
A lot of the help I had is, like, I didn't teach right out of college. I started teaching at, like, 27, not 22. And so I had a little bit of life experience, and I think that helped me a lot. And then, my parents are divorced. I have some really young siblings. My youngest sibling is about to turn 14. And so I get to see, I've seen the different stages of parenting from my parents. Like, experiencing it.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, how are you raising them now compared to how you raised me?
Yes.
Who is this?
I told my sister the other day, I was like, man, dad got soft.
Yeah. Well, it's truly a unique perspective to you, right? Because it seems like the best of the parenting experiences is really what's going to serve you in your classroom to have, I guess, the most effective connection with your students. And it makes sense to me that you're like, I don't need to fight every single one of these battles. You know, I want to keep them engaged and I want to discipline within a reasonable structure, but like maybe not everything is a hill worth dying on, you know?
No. And for me, I probably need to find a couple more hills to die on, but.
But you're a nice guy. We've talked about it's. There's nothing wrong with being a nice guy.
Oh, but I like this. Okay, so you're the nice guy, and you mentioned like you didn't feel like aggressive in the way that you had to like navigate the Dominican Republic, right? But then you're like, but I do like the spotlight, and like I do want to shine. But you're like a quiet shine, right? Like I don't want to be the loud shine. I want to be the quiet shine. But
it really depends on the situation. I had this friend in college who also really liked the spotlight. And it's funny, so in those situations, I could be loud, but I didn't want to compete. But then I would be quieter. I'm pretty loud. In the right scenario, I can be pretty loud and obnoxious. And like I'm at volleyball, and it's not even my game, and I see somebody do a good play, and I'm like, I see you, dog. I see you. Go ahead, get that
And you do play a lot of recreational sports. Also, happy belated birthday. Not too long ago, you had a big birthday. So congratulations for making it.
Yeah.
Happy belated.
Patrick, what I'm wondering is if you happen to have brought another piece that you would like to share with us.
Yes. So this one's probably more about the revenge side. As I was thinking about that word, I was like, I don't really do revenge. And maybe this is why. I feel like as a child, I did not learn how to handle conflict. I think my mom tried to model it, but as a single mom with two boys, sometimes she just wanted the nonsense to stop. And my dad was a conflict avoider, avoiding the issues until he couldn't keep it in any longer. Then he would raise his voice to drown out the outside noise. And I never saw my grandpa in a real conflict. And my grandma had two master's degrees with a PhD and the guilt trip. So yeah, I didn't learn much about conflict. So I had to learn as an adult. I had to learn that my default was to take in other people's pain, chalking it up to minor offenses and allowing broken fences to appear to be mended while suffering in silence. I had to learn that sometimes the strongest bonds come about as a result of resolved conflict, that sometimes conflict doesn't even mean that the person doesn't like you. Some people just love conflict. I'm still learning what conflict looks like in romance. If there's conflict I want to handle, but sometimes other people need space to process. This seems obvious now, but back then it made no sense. I guess having to learn these lessons later on made me more self-aware. I'm more aware of when I'm actually hurting versus when I'm really just tired and vulnerable, weak. I have learned that being weak does not mean allowing others to freely walk over me. I've learned that I can say no without causing irreparable damage. I've learned that it takes two to tango, but sometimes one person is tangoing a lot more than the other. I've learned that a lot of perceived hurts are really false narratives created by the gossipers that live in my mind. They tend to go away when the interpersonal communication is clear. The intrapersonal makes things murkier like stagnant water and salty like the ocean. It takes truth to be the potion. I guess it is true in more ways than one that the truth will set you free. These truths have helped me deal with conflict both outside and inside of me.
Oh, I love that poem so much.
That was a fun one.
I need to read this. Like, this is something that I want to refer back to about the conflict and romance and
the gossipers in my mind.
Oh, gosh, man. That was so good.
Thank you.
Yeah, so did you equate conflict with revenge? Is that because you are conflict avoidant to some degree, or that's what was modeled for you, you therefore do not feel good at revenge? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, it's like, it's really weird. When I got the email about revenge, I was like, I don't even value it, or so I thought. But like the way I interact with conflict shows my way of lashing out. Like I can create these false narratives about you, or I can pull away from the relationship. And that's how I kind of get my revenge. And even recently, it's like, I could just be really petty. I was like, good night. Like I had a situation going on and I wanted the other person to initiate it. Like, I'm not going to initiate with this girl till she initiates with me. I'm always reaching out. And that was like my way of getting revenge. Like, so am I going to say.
Okay, so you're a little passive aggressive, Patrick. I see.
Yeah. Definitely.
Listen, it's important to know these things about yourself. Sometimes someone will tell me, like, you know, more or less, hey, you're an asshole about this thing. And I'm like, I know, you're right. And they're like, why aren't you fixing it? And I'm like, because I don't have, like, all the time in the world to make everything about me correct. I'm just, you're right. Be mad at me. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Let's go. Sometimes I just don't have time to fix all this shit.
I just need to be aware. I just need to know that it can pop up. And then when it's popping up, I can maybe try to correct a little bit. But sometimes I don't know until, you know, a day later. I'm like, oh, yep, that's what that was.
I see what happened there. Yeah. Well, see, you know, being self-aware, even if it takes a day or two, like, it's so important. Like, you're doing the work, you're doing the reflection.
I call that the ego review. I feel like it's the drive-in movie where I review my shit all week. And I'm like, I need to apologize for that. Make a note at Tuesday, 6 p.m. You know? Yeah. Text this bitch and apologize.
But then it's also interesting when I think about revenge, because, like, going back to faith is like the same as first. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And so it's like, what is even my role in vengeance? And, like, how does that play with forgiveness? I think our culture as a whole is really struggling with forgiveness. Like, I hate when, like, an athlete gets in trouble 15 years later for something they tweeted in high school. I'm like, do you know what you would have done with the internet in high school?
Right.
So it's like, I don't want consequences to always be so punitive. Like, there are consequences. We do need to have justice and redemption and all of these different things. But when it's just, I'm going to do bad to you just so that you can feel what I feel, like, I struggle with that.
Yeah.
A huge poor me community out there. Like, the fact that you scroll back through somebody's social media for 10, 15 years to hold them accountable as if it were present day, as if any and every one of us has not changed, there's something wrong with us as a community, as a society, when we're seeking that kind of revenge.
When you have that time, but also it really messes, like, with the linearity of time. It's the non-linearity that's, like, you're digging up something from 15 years ago, and, like,
God help
now,
us on the shit I said 15 years ago.
Right, and it's very strange. It's just, like, off with their head. You know what I mean? And I don't understand that aspect of, like, what's going on with our culture right now at all.
Yeah, I think we're addicted to outrage. Like, we just like being outraged. It is an interesting emotion because you would think it would be negative and not feel good, but it kind of does.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something, like, you feel like it's like outrage, injustice, or getting confused or something. They feel like if I'm outraged by this, I am somehow doing good. You know what I mean? Like, it's very confusing.
People,
like,
addicted to emotional chaos.
Oh, yeah. But my partner brought up a good point last night. He was like, if you have any idea how cush your life is, how good you're, what a unique period of time and existence that you get to sit around and be upset about something that someone tweeted 15 years ago, you have no concept that you get to have your food, like, DoorDashed to you, and then you complain on the internet about something someone did. Like, wow.
Yeah. It's an enormous amount of privilege.
Now, speaking of DoorDash, I don't use delivery service because that makes me outraged when my food comes cold.
Listen, I don't like it when it comes cold, but I like it when I don't have to leave to go get it either.
Also very true.
I'm like, bring me my meal. It's the closest I get to not being, like, a poor artist when I'm like, I snap my fingers and suddenly somebody has purchased and brought me Chinese food. Like, what a gift.
It's your little feeling of luxury.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, is my personal chef up? Huh, wow.
Well, yes, this orange chicken is fantastic.
Also, I want all servers to be able to, like, live the server life if you need to, but also be able to, like, not talk to anybody at tableside ever again if they don't want to. There's nothing I hate more than that exchange.
Which is also really interesting, having lived out of the country, because, like, what is good customer service is different. And I get it now. Like, sometimes you really don't need to be checked up on every 5, 10, 15 minutes.
We're adults and we know how to eat. It's like, you know, in Italy, the waiter's smoking a cigarette for 45 minutes. He doesn't care. You're going to be there for 7 hours when you go.
You
to
got
center,
your you know food. I mean? Our exchange is done. You pay now.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, trying to get the check in the DR sometimes is a hassle.
I'm pro, like, after, if you haven't dropped it off in a reasonable amount of time, I'm leaving the amount of money that I'm paying here on this table and I'm going. I mean, that was in cash days. Now I cannot.
Yeah.
I can't imagine paying for anything in cash now.
No.
What's cash?
Exactly.
Oh, my brother, he doesn't live in the state. And so sometimes, you know, he's got to send money to my mom or whatever. My mom and my stepdad are totally against Venmo, Cash App, any of that. So I become the intermediary. My brother Venmos me the money, Cash App me the money, and then I give my parents. So I got checked, and I was like, you know what? If y'all gonna live in 1995, I'm gonna treat y'all like it's 1995. Give me a check. Love ya.
You're the intermediary banker. You should start charging a fee to be the middleman for this. That's hilarious.
This is coming from the person who, when Vanessa visits me or we meet up somewhere, she doesn't like have GPS or utilize any form of like smartphone. So she has to MapQuest her directions still, and she might be 4 hours getting to you. She might get lost. Who knows where Vanessa will, when she will arrive.
I will get there eventually. I run into every construction site and I make a lot of circles, but like I'll try to screenshot or like write down the direction so I know the general area that I'm supposed to be going.
Wow. That is noble that you would still like MapQuest and use a map. I had a friend like that and I'm like, you know, I'm very reliant on technology. It's just who I am.
When Siri takes you to someone's driveway backyard in Mississippi, then you learn real quick not to listen to that bitch when she's telling you where to turn. And you're like, I should have been smarter. I should have known not to turn here. So, you know, maps are a great thing. People, there's maps. You can follow the map. It's a piece of paper. All the highways are charted
blasphemy.
On it. We can still utilize
so
these things.
Patrick, I am incredibly grateful for you joining us on Confessing Animals today. Thank you for sharing your writing with us. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. It's been wonderful. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Confessing Animals. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review so more people can find us. And if you want to support the show or get access to the extended video casts, join us on Patreon, confessinganimalspodcast.com.